My name is Andy Conlin, and I'm a graduate student researcher with the Africa Center. Today, you're listening to Field Notes. Field Notes is a growing communications project designed to collect and promote research and communications from Colorado State University and beyond. Today, we're talking to Dr. Rebecca Kading. Dr. Kading is a newly appointed member of the Africa Center's Executive Committee. Her lab, situated in the Center for Vector-Borne Infectious Diseases, studies the ecology and transmission dynamics of vector-borne pathogens, particularly emerging arboviruses in East Africa. Join me in welcoming Rebecca.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here, Andy.
Yeah, so can you start by just giving us a brief introduction to kind of who you are?
Sure. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Microbiology, Immunology, and Pathology. I've been faculty at CSU since 2016, based primarily out on Foothills campus, where our lab studies the ecology and transmission of vector-borne and zoonotic pathogens.
Awesome. Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about your work and what specific research questions you're trying to answer?
Sure. So we're kind of broadly focused on emerging infectious diseases, primarily those that are transmitted by mosquitoes, but we also have a project on viruses and bats in Uganda, which I'm very excited about.
Sweet. I hope we'll get to hear more about that specific project as we go down
the line. We do a lot of lab work as well as field work, try to engage students in a variety of different aspects of the projects, and focusing really on what are those risk factors for transmission and emergence and spread and establishment of infectious agents in new areas.
That's super cool. What kind of led you to this career path?
Oh, it was a meandering route. if you'd asked 10-year-old Rebecca what I was going to be when I grew up, this was not in the scope of possibilities, but I'm really glad to have ended up here. I think I got interested in wildlife and conservation, as a teen and sort of started to think that direction and ended up at the University of Delaware, because I grew up in Delaware. And at that time, they didn't have a wildlife program as a major, and so I had to take entomology classes in order to concentrate in wildlife. So I was kind of forced into the insect classes in the beginning, but then I really enjoyed it and ended up working for a couple summers for the State of Delaware Mosquito Control Operation, which is very largely based on salt marsh mosquito control and national wildlife refuges. And at the time, this was pre-West Nile, but they still did surveillance for eastern equine encephalitis virus. So I was really started to appreciate the context of the system as a whole. So I was, at the time, more interested in birds and ecology, but I got to experience, yes, all of that is interconnected. And so they were studying these mosquitoes that transmit viruses, but we're out here and I'm, getting to birdwatch and appreciate, these are reservoirs for these viruses. And how does that happen? And how does it all come together and protect, the health of the environment and people and animals? And I mean, it was One Health before we started saying One Health, but that sort of really gripped me and helps guide me down the path that I'm on now.
Awesome. Yeah, I similarly, my undergrad didn't offer anything in wildlife conservation specifically, so I ended up in environmental science, and that introduced me to ecology, and that kind of ended up the path that I led. Mm-hmm. So I think that those experiences are really special in how they kind of forge the way for where you're going to go, even though you don't know it at the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, what would 10-year-old Rebecca have said?
I was going to be a ballerina.
Oh, okay. Weren't we all? I think I was at one point too, even though I didn't even do ballet. Cool. Okay. So for people new to this field, you've mentioned some terms like vector-borne diseases, One Health. Can you kind of introduce those topics a little bit and why they're important to study?
Absolutely. So vector in this sense would refer to an arthropod or insect that transmits an infectious agent. So mosquitoes, ticks, sandflies, lice, kissing bugs, black flies, all of those creatures that can move a disease agent from one organism to the next. And so we're, as thinking globally, this group of pathogens, these vector-borne pathogens, have represented a significant proportion of the emerging and re-emerging diseases that threaten human and animal health. And this is not something that's going to stop, if we're honest. And so it's important to understand, you know, how these agents are maintained in nature, as well as how they're transmitted and what the health risks are. So it's a hugely broad field. And so we try to take an integrative approach to this and understand what's going on in nature, as well as, you know, conduct some more hypothesis-driven controlled experiments in the laboratory to answer specific questions.
Very cool. I saw on your website that one of your current projects looks at the emerging Rift Valley fever virus. Mm-hmm. What kind of risk does this virus pose, and what are your objectives for that project?
Yeah, so this is a really exciting area of research in our lab that we've been able to carve a niche for ourselves out at here at CSU. Rift Valley fever virus, the name is derived from the Great Rift Valley in East Africa, where this virus is endemic. It is found throughout Africa, though, and has spread to the Middle East and Madagascar and some islands off the coast of Africa, but has not come to the United States. But it is a significant pathogen, causes hemorrhagic fever disease in humans and animals, most significantly in animals. It would be a huge economic and veterinary impact to the agricultural industry. And so it's transmitted by mosquitoes, but can also be spread directly from infected animals to people. So there is, a biothreat component to it too. So it's a select agent virus. And so we're interested in kind of getting out in front of that in the context of, you know, what's out there in the world that we don't want here, and how do we protect ourselves from it and mitigate against it. And so we're doing studies to understand what the transmission risk would be in North America if it wasn't to be introduced here. And so we have more targeted intervention strategies for surveillance and control of that if it were to show up. We've also been involved in projects focused on the vaccine development for RIF for humans and animals, and conducting some safety studies for that. And then we're, you know, kind of focused on the vector aspect of that and some of the important questions that would relate to virus invasion.
Yeah, and I saw on your experience that you've worked for the CDC before, mm-hmm. as well.
Yes.
So how would you say you've kind of continued to bring your experience from the CDC to this more current research?
Was a very formative period in my career development. I was at the CDC Division of Vector-Borne Diseases here in Fort Collins for almost 8 years, and that's where I started working on Rift Valley fever, and also bats. I continue to have a collaboration with partners at the CDC and keep that bridge very active with the information exchange. I'm very glad to have had that experience and to bring some of those projects here to CSU and to keep those collaborations open.
Yeah, and if you don't mind me asking, just out of curiosity, being in this field during COVID, mm-hmm. Which has been, you know, for a lot of people, a very new experience of what a global pandemic is like. Mm-hmm. What was it like essentially being at the forefront of such a widespread disease?
That challenging for my seat as well, in that from the infectious disease and scientific standpoint, just kind of being in gear, okay, this is a virus, you know, group of viruses that's associated with bats, and oh my gosh, I study bats and in caves in Africa, and how can we contribute to this problem and use our knowledge and abilities and resources and infrastructure to contribute to this pandemic. At the same time, you know, we're human as well, and you know, face the same uncertainties and challenges that everyone has gone through with the pandemic. So trying to reconcile that, but overall, you know, it's some kind of something in the infectious disease field that, you know, we're ready to kick into gear and contribute to if we can. You know, right after I started at CSU, it was Zika virus, and so, you know, it's kind of the second rodeo here at CSU with COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to the Rift Valley fever virus, doing work on the ground in Africa, kind of seeing these things firsthand, how has that affected your perspective?
It's been tremendously important to participate in field work and to do that. My first experiences working in Africa were during my PhD program, and I studied malaria in Zambia. And actually seeing, you know, being in the rural mission hospitals, seeing people that are suffering from these infectious diseases, children, it really just hits your heart in a way that you never forget. And so it's, you know, it's one thing to do experiments in the lab and to study these things, but to really see the impact of your work firsthand is something that really has been a driving motivative factor behind the work that we do. And so it's a very significant component of all of this.
Absolutely. And I saw that you've conducted research in several different countries, including Zambia, Kenya, Uganda, and more. Going off of that, what have been some of your most eye-opening experiences from your time in Africa?
Oh, I've really loved getting to know the people in the communities that we're working in, and really experiencing and learning from them, and getting to know them and understanding what the needs and challenges are, and you know, and the joys that they have too. I mean, it's, you know, it's really a humbling experience to get to know them and to see what they face on a daily basis, and so, you know, sort of as a very rewarding tangent from the research aspect is my husband and I started a charity over in Uganda in 2016, and so we've been funding children through school over there since that time. And it's, you know, just sort of one of those things that you get to talking to people, you understand where their specific needs are, and you're like, hey, I can help with that. And so it's been an extremely rewarding aspect just to connect with people on the human side in addition to the scientific side.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you mind telling me more about your charity and how that started? And
yeah, of course. It's called Musoke International, M-U-S-O-K-E, and that means rainbow in Luganda. This came about through one of our technicians at the Uganda Virus Research Institute, who's been working with me for a decade. And she just, her name's Teddy, and she just happened to mention to me that she started this, you know, organization where she's, you know, helping orphans and providing some resources to guardians and this. And I'm like, well, tell me more about that. And you know, it just really, you know, struck me that, you know, this is someone who's struggled a lot in her own life, and she has, you know, the big heart to try to give back and to help people even less fortunate than her. And so I came home and we talked about it. We're like, you know, I could give her a little bit of money, but, you know, there's really a specific opportunity here to make a huge difference in the lives of a lot of people. And so we formed the 501c3, got everything set up here, and I'm like, we have the perfect situation. We're the fundraising arm. We have people in country who can do the, you know, get the kids in school and pay the tuition and follow up on everybody. And so it's been a kind of a beautiful partnership. And so we've had 133 students we've supported so far.
Wow.
18 have graduated, and we have 115 that we're still putting through school and kind of navigating the whole COVID situation. And, you know, as other things come up with different community development projects, we try to support that as well.
That's really amazing.
Thank you.
What, on kind of the other realm of things, have been some of the more challenging aspects of your projects?
I think it's, I mean, the project we have on looking at bats and human-bat interactions and the potential for virus transmission and spillover is a really, really fascinating project, and, you know, so passionate about it. And it's kind of it comes with a lot of challenges too, just kind of running a huge program that's, you know, coordinating things both on the state side and the Uganda side, and the regulatory and the logistics and the administrative and the subawards and human subjects and animals, and so it's a lot to make sure we have our ducks in order. But just kind of being there and having students and research scientists from my team participate in that, and with our wonderful team that we work with in Uganda, the rewards are staggering. I mean, we're getting some really cool data from this, and the experiences that everybody's having through this, and the relationships are just so worth it.
Absolutely. I found, kind of in my experience, I did a little bit of kind of cross-cultural research in Tanzania,
mm-hmm.
And I found that I was pretty new to conducting research in a kind of respectful and mutual reciprocal way.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some ways that you've been intentional in these research projects, in being someone from the U.S.
Yeah.
Going to Africa to conduct your research.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an important important point. It's something, sometimes I feel like we're still feeling our way out there. We try to intentionally go through the appropriate hierarchical channels within the communities, and so rather than, we don't just show up.
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, there's, we have, you know, kind of connections with people on the ground who kind of know the structure of things. And this past time when we went to Uganda, we had, you know, a meeting set up with sort of the district level officials before we've even gone to talk to the police department and say, this is why we're here. But then definitely sort of at the community level, you know, and building those. And some of the places we've been to, we've been going for a long time, so we've had these relationships in place. But this past trip, we went to a couple of different places, and so we spent a lot more time talking with them and answering questions and going through things and showing them things. And so it's a lot more on the engagement side and developing some materials that we can share with them. And and so it's difficult. But it's, you know, it's still, I think, a learning process, but we're trying to go through the appropriate channels for connecting and getting the project done in a way that serves everybody.
That's great. Yeah, I don't think it's something where you're ever done learning.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, okay, I'm doing it now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, you know, it's a ever kind of adapting system, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
Moving forward, what is one piece of advice you would give to graduate students or people who are early in their academic career?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is good. Stick with it. It's not easy. Not everything's going to go well, but just persevere and be nice to people, work hard, put your best foot forward. Be somebody that people want to work with. It's just going to serve you and your program well, but also open up really exciting new opportunities.
Right.
But yeah, just persevere.
That's very good advice. It sounds simple, but it's not simple. And then just to kind of wrap up, I want to provide an opportunity if there are any stories or anecdotes or anything else you'd like to share from your experiences.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's a, oh gosh, yeah, the one that comes to mind first is sort of one of the interesting ones, because it's, you know, we get into places that are well off the beaten path. Mm-hmm. And so there was, you know, one particular cave that we were interested in getting some samples from, and it turns out that this particular cave was sort of a very sacred place to the local community. They had the entrance blocked off. It was, you know, believed to be, you know, sort of ancestral significance, and that the spirits of the ancestors were in the bats and all of this. And so it was, you know, very interesting discussions and situation to be in, to kind of, you know, well, how, and they turned out, you know, but it was a lot of, you know, kind of getting into the depth of their beliefs and their culture and their, you know, to the point where some of our Ugandan partners hadn't experienced this before and had these types of interactions. And so in the end, we were able to, you know, get some samples for our research. But it kind of going through those negotiations and hearing sort of the significance of this site for them, for their particular reasons, was very eye-opening, and it also kind of brought some interesting perspective from the infectious disease side, because, you know, we approached this cave as something like, well, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere, like, you know, what's the emergence potential of something here? But then after talking with them, it's such an important place that people would come there monthly to have these ceremonies and, you know, then disperse back across the country. And we're like, wow, it's actually, there's a lot of opportunity for things to happen here. So, but it, yeah, something that comes out of those discussions and interactions, and you kind of look at things through a different lens afterwards. But yeah, pretty get into some interesting situations.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. That's a, that definitely sounds like it would be memorable for sure. And then lastly, if you, for our listeners, have any resources or websites that you would direct them to in order to learn more about your research or your charity or anything that you want to plug,
I want
to provide that opportunity as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. One thing that's, you know, kind of difficult to, walk a line that's we're finding is difficult in this field is that, you know, we're appreciate, you know, that bats can harbor some highly pathogenic infectious agents, but also that, you know, bats are so important to our environment, provide so many services, and we definitely appreciate that and try to incorporate that in our messaging when we're out in the field that, you know, we're here and we need to be safe, but, you know, we don't want anything to happen to these bats. So that was also something that came up during COVID. Well, how do we, you know, how do we approach these conversations? So it was just, you know, being mindful of, you know, there's, you know, definitely resources out there on the Bat Conservation International, and then the some resources from, you know, from the Bat Ecology Conservation, but with an infectious disease perspective, there's guidance documents on the IUCN Bat Specialist Group website. And then Musoke International is the charity, musokeinternational.org. You can learn a lot more about what we're doing there. But
great.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Final thank you for joining us, Rebecca. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
If you are a new listener, feel free to connect with the Africa Center by visiting africacenter.colostate.edu. And the tab at the top that says connect will allow you to join our email list where you can receive newsletters as well as information about upcoming events. We look forward to seeing you next time, and thank you for listening to Field Notes.